Hello, welcome to the discussion group for 10-8-2013. We're proud to have a lot of our friends back tonight. This is going to be a good discussion on Chapter 8 from the Great Pain Deception. It's Seeing the Seeds, Growing the Pain, Who is the Gardener? In the book, The Great Pain Deception by Steve Ozenich. So, we've been having some great discussion, guys, and this is, I know this is just going to be another night to add to all those great discussions. Like I said, we got a lot of good people that's joined us that's full of wisdom tonight, so this is going to be a good one. I'm going to go ahead and go and tell the disclaimer. Before we start, I do need to remind everyone that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. Now, with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and give the summary now. Hearing is believing. It's human nature to believe what someone in authority tells us, especially if a doctor tells us we have a herniated disc in our back or we have leg and ankle pain. Maybe we run too much on hard surfaces. That bad news goes to our mind and often goes from there to the part of the body that the doctor says is hurting us, and often pain then feels even worse. Bad health news really can be bad news seeds that sow pain into our bodies and mind. Steve Ozenich devotes Chapter 8 of his book, The Great Pain Deception, to planting the seeds, growing the pain, who is the gardener. The gardener for healing is Dr. John Sarno, who wrote about healing pain through belief. And TMS, that is very likely, is not caused by anything structural, but emotional through repressed emotions. Now, we'll be speaking tonight about archetypes, the power of suggestion, seeding your unconscious. I get that's where people, say things to you and put stuff into your mind. Doctors that have convinced you that you have issues, panic and fear, and so forth. So that'd pretty much be the summary of what Steve's book is about. And the first one, guys, is the archetypes. There's on page 145, I see here archetypes. And we got mothers, fathers, wise old men, drunks, bums, cripples, wounded ones, teachers, and so forth. So we can understand that growing up, mom might have said something that stuck with you. And, like for me, for instance, there was things that mom would always do. She would always worry. And as she worried and all like that, as I got older, I took that on. I took on just to be a worrywart for about 7 or 8 years of my life. It just kind of went in there unconsciously. But she was an archetype to me, sort of. And that's really one of the questions I'd like to start with. If anybody's could say anything about an archetype that maybe influenced you in a way that maybe, led to some ill issues or pain.
Yes, my mother. This is Jay. My mother was a worrier. She worried about everything, and I picked that up from her. My father once said that if the good Lord would drop down and make all of her troubles go perfectly away, today it would, and within 3 days, she would invent a whole new set of problems to worry about.
Okay.
And I definitely inherited that.
Okay, and then, these archetypes can be our doctors. They can be a childhood hero, even a childhood villain for that matter.
So I'll jump in a little bit and say a couple things about archetypes.
Okay.
So as Steve explains in the book, the concept of archetypes goes back to Jung, Carl Gustav Jung, who in Vienna was a psychiatrist a peer of Dr. Freud's. They had a stormy relationship, and archetype is one of the ideas that that Jung is very well known for. And whenever you hear in Steve's book the concept of the shadow, or pushing an idea into the shadows, that also comes from Jung. And I think that what the archetypes mean in this chapter is they help us understand how powerful it can be when a doctor gives us a nocebo. So to me, this chapter is kind of like saying, hey, this is why nocebos can be so powerful. This is why why we all get sick in the same way. It's because there are these archetypes like the healer, the doctor, the authority figure, the teacher, and a physician has aspects of all of those. So when they say something, it means a lot to us. We trust them, just like Eric yeah. might have trusted his mom. Is there someone who can relate to that? Were you just saying something?
Oh, I was just agreeing with Forrest. I'm a bit of a contrarian. So, in my family, doctors are the opposite of a healer, and we don't like them. They've killed a lot of us. So I had a doctor tell me that I had to up my exercise, and I was already exercising half hour a day, and she said, well, then go to an hour, right? So I did it, but I was mad as hell. And then that night on the news, I heard somebody say, talk about plantar fasciitis, and within 24 hours, both feet, and I was crippled for 2 years. So that's nocebo in no uncertain terms. There was nothing wrong with my feet. I just did it myself.
Yeah, and these archetypes do stay in our minds too, you know, like it was talking about the bum and the drunk or the villain. People that just might have made an impression on you when you was growing up. And then, you know, unaware, if you don't know, you know, TMS therapy knowledge like we do, then, you know, it could be unconscious in there. And for instance, somebody would say, well, you better not do that or you'll get sick. And then it's just in your mind. And say you do something one day and you say, oh gosh, I shouldn't have done that. And then all of a sudden, you know, a week later, you're getting sick. But anyway, that's the unconscious archetype voice that's still in there I was talking about. Does that make sense?
Herbie, it goes back way beyond our mother or our doctor and that sort of thing. It goes right back into human history because there have always been mothers, there have always been fathers, there have always been healers, there have always been, there's probably thousands of archetypes that we have always known all through human history. So even if, like, what it fascinates me is, say for example, the mother archetype, even if your mother was a crappy mother, you, on some level, you know what a mother should be, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You
oh, yeah.
know what a mother should be. Yeah, you do. And so the idea is that somehow or another, the idea of mother or the idea of healer or the idea of hero or whatever, or drunkard, has become part of the collective unconscious. And when we have our personal experiences with our own mother, or our own doctor, or our own drunk, it becomes part of our personal unconscious. So there's the two levels, and this is something that Jung came up with by observing himself. And personally, I find it very, very interesting because it works with the idea of parts. We're not just Herbie. We're not just Enjoy. We're not just Jay. We're a lot of different ideas come together, and that's why people are such multi-layered, fascinating creatures. And that's why men say, "Well, you never know what a woman thinks, right?" Well, I got news for you: women don't really always know what men think. Although we sometimes do, you know, but I'm just saying that it's a very, very deep concept, and we're one with the entire human race on the topic of archetypes because everybody's had a mother, And what Steve is talking here in this chapter, he's talking about foot pain, and he's saying that there was a famous runner who had foot pain, and all of a sudden everybody's got foot pain because he's a hero. And it gets into your mind, and, oh, wait a minute, this guy that I really respect, he's a wonderful runner, he's got foot pain, that could happen to me. Oh, my God, I think I feel it. Right?
Yeah, Larry, it was there, Larry Bird. Larry Bird was
enjoy,
the most famous
basketball love you,
players.
I love you dearly, Enjoy, but how can you say that? Oh, I live in Boston.
What?
Larry Bird. I grew up with Larry Bird.
We love Larry
okay.
Bird.
Hey,
if I was 20 years old or 15 years old or even old enough to know what was going on at that time back then I probably would have hurt my foot because Larry Bird was hurting. You know, I mean, United States.
I've never heard of Larry Bird in my life. You know, my foot pain happened because some lady in Vancouver on the news told me I was going to have foot pain.
Yeah.
You know, and she said, oh, don't do this and don't do that. Well, I'd just done it. And within 24 hours, I was completely crippled. So I don't know Larry Byrne. He might not have been a hero to me, but apparently he was. This is what Steve O is saying in the book.
Great.
He's saying that that a lot of people extrapolated from Larry Byrne's experience and ended up with their own foot pain, and it just spread from there like a virus. It's like a virus, you know. It spreads from person to person because we're not anywhere near as disconnected from each other as we sometimes feel. We listen to each other. We believe each other, you know?
It's almost like Larry Bird was like patient zero. He was like the first one, and then that spread to more people, and it spread to
exactly.
more people. And then it spread to that newscaster. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was
exactly.
a great
yeah.
archetype example of how it can cause pain in you. From the collective unconscious. That was awesome.
Hi, Hi, hello, can you hear me?
Hey, Tennis Tom.
How you doing?
We was wondering
good.
Where you're at. I didn't know if you'd went on vacation and you was just you'd be here in a minute. What you doing, Tom?
No, I've been listening. I just want to interject on the subject of plantar fasciitis. So a few years ago, maybe a decade ago, lovely wife of the tennis pro at my club developed plantar fasciitis. And it wasn't soon afterwards that a whole bunch of other lady players at the club developed plantar fasciitis also. So that's just my
that's
personal
right.
anecdote.
Wow.
Being a witness to
yeah.
the development of the nocebo effect.
Wow.
Well, and that touches a little bit on the next chapter, and we can talk about this next week, but the idea of a meme where these ideas infect one person and then the next person and the next person. It's kind of like, you know, before we had viral videos, we had viral ideas and viral diagnoses, viral plantar fasciitis. And that's a great example.
And one thing I didn't even... saying in this chapter is he's saying we've gone from a species who, as a generalization, most people were extremely healthy, and we've gone to a situation now in 2013 where everybody's got something. Everybody needs drugs. Everybody has to spend time at the doctors, and if you don't have it, have it.
Everybody's falling apart.
It's just true.
Except for us, of course.
Yeah, right. We have Dr. Sarno to thank for our health. But on regard to this chapter, made me think about how doctors are constantly around sick people, diseases, colds, you name it, bubonic plague, yet they don't get sick. How come?
Too busy making money.
They know the truth.
That's a good answer.
You know what? I think that's actually not true at all, though. I read something recently that doctors have a shorter life expectancy than any of us by like 7 or 8 years or something like that.
How many years?
Wow. I want to say it's like 7 or 8 years. Their life expectancy.
It's all the nocebos that they're exposed to. Yeah, and the stress.
Yeah.
A lot of stress.
Yeah.
And not the archetypes, you know, not to mention, I mean, you've got people constantly being sick. Looking for sickness, aren't you? Even yourself.
Yeah.
Wow.
I guess it can finally grow on you, you know, after all those years. Wasn't there in the path? What was the name of that book we had
Pathways
studied?
Pathways to Pain Relief.
Yeah, wasn't she? Tell me her name. I always forget it. Forrest.
Frances Summer Anderson. Frances.
Yeah, Frances Summer Anderson. She was having the discussion with the people, and she could actually feel in her body, their emotions and stuff. And wow, how that can, you know, really toll on you. But I know Frances Summer Anderson knows what she's doing. She understands it. She's, you know, licensed. I mean, you know, the doctor to do it. But at the same time, you know, it has to take a toll. It really does. I've been around a lot of people and helped a lot of people myself, you know, in the time that I was preaching and stuff. And there was a lot of people that came to me and, you know, it's a burden of heart, you know, you cry with them, you love them, and so forth. And you start to sometimes take on their symptoms.
Yeah.
I have something to add to that. If I can.
Yeah,
please.
I had a crappy mother growing up, but my mom is a nurse, and she's actually a hospice nurse, and she sees a lot of pain and suffering, and that's completely aside from her abilities as a mother. But when I first started going through experiencing physical symptoms and having pain and that sort of thing, she also suffers from fibromyalgia and myofascial pain syndrome and lots of different maladies. But when I started going through this, you know, I didn't have a great relationship with my mom, but I just had my first baby, and so I felt obligated to have her in my life a little bit more because she was the grandmother and that sort of thing. But I remember asking her, you know, like, what is wrong with me? I'm hurting. Like, my back hurts, and I just have pain all over my body. I feel like I've been hit by a bus. And she said to me, and I replay this in my mind, and that sometimes I'm going to erase this from my mind at some point, but she said to me, you probably have what I have, and you're going to end up just like me.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, that's something that I replay that in my mind a lot. And I'm sure it has something to do with the fact that I'm still struggling with symptoms.
Powerful nocebo from a powerful authority figure.
Right. Yeah. Even though I don't feel like she's powerful in my life, that unconscious, like she was my mother.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to let that power go, but I'm working on it.
Do you finally have something in common with her?
Yeah.
No, I think she actually felt like good about that in a kind of a sick way.
Yeah.
Like, I had told her for years that you know, she was running herself ragged and she wasn't taking care of herself, and that's why, you know, she didn't feel well, and that's why she was dealing with issues. And, you know, she told me it was it wasn't psychological. You know, she had an organic cause for all of her pain, and it was almost like it was validating to her, because now it was genetic, you know, and not something that was self-inflicted.
Yep. Wow.
Okay, anybody else got anything on archetypes, or before we move on to the next handful of stuff to talk about?
Well, first I just wanted to thank you for sharing that story. I thought that was a great story.
It was awesome.
Came across another similar kind of mother-daughter thing in the Wall Street Journal from October 7th, believe it or not, talking about how pain becomes chronic. This one's a story from Elliot Crane. He's the director of pediatric pain management at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital at Stanford University. He relates a story of, I'm going to read it now. One of his patients, a girl with complex regional pain syndrome, which I'll interject is, I think, is definitely TMS, in my personal opinion, an often chronic condition in which pain tends to start from an extremity and radiates throughout the body, had been treated and was doing well enough to run a 10-kilometer race recently. But she twisted her ankle during the event. The child's mother emailed that she was panicking that her daughter was going to get CRPS. Again, Dr. Crane says, his advice to her, number one, don't panic. If you panic, she'll panic, he says. We don't want her pain enhanced by the anxiety. So I thought there was a lot of depth in that. And another thing about the importance of moms, parents, archetypes.
Yeah.
By the way, kudos to Herbie. Sometimes when you're talking, you can hear an echo. It's because people have are calling in and they're using speakerphone. Please, 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 please don't use speakerphone because it's it makes it hard for other people to talk. That's where the echo comes from. And I think Herbie muted it for a little while. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Gosh, you know, when we speak about our parents, Forrest, Enjoy, Panda Girl, Jay, when we speak about our parents and the archetypes and growing up and all that, we can still feel it in our hearts. And it's this is just a great discussion, y'all. This, it really is. I think we could speak about archetypes all night, don't you, Forrest?
Mm-hmm.
I know Tom could. Okay. Well, has anybody else got anything about the archetypes that they might want to talk about? I want to go back over those one more time. We've got the healer archetype, which is basically the physician. Then we got the foo archetype, and I believe this is the person that believes just about everything the doctor tells them, right, Forrest?
Or someone who believes things which aren't true.
Yeah. And then...
That'd be all of us.
We've all been there. And that pretty much... And then we got the... That's the shaman. The shaman.
Yeah, he does bring that up. And I think that shamans are people who can very powerfully... give us they can inspire us to health. He has one of my favorite quotes from this chapter. He says, it is the sufferer who ultimately heals himself through deeper belief, but he draws his own belief from the healer's belief. If the doctor doesn't believe healing is possible, neither will the patient. And I just thought that was a really powerful quote. I liked how that kind of summarized TMS healing and kind of like what we do on the forum and what we're doing right now is in the end, it's down to all of us to accept the diagnosis, to believe it with all of our hearts, to figure out what we need to, but it also, we can learn a lot from others and, you know, in their belief. I think that's a really powerful thing. That's why some of these books are so helpful. And I think that's what a shaman does. A shaman, you know, heals you. A shaman helps you to tap into your own healing ability because they believe so much that they're healing you. And what you believe, I think that's one of the main things, themes of this chapter, is what you believe about whether or not you're going to heal is going to come true.
Yeah, and it goes right into... a question I have, Forrest, is the power of suggestion. And it's like, how many times have you, has somebody sit down next to you and suggested something to you that might could be going, you know, going on, like they might look at you and say, man, you're not looking well today. And all of a sudden you start, you know, no, I'm doing fine. But 10 minutes later, you start not feeling well. just because they, you know, brought up a suggestion that you might not be looking well today. And then, you know, they could say, well, look, I see a little bit of sweat on your forehead. And it's just a suggestion, but you probably don't even have sweat on your forehead. But 30 minutes later, you could really be sweating. And that's just the power of suggestion, you know. Just for instance, I know hypnotists are great at it, but I'm talking about in general. In general, somebody that, you know, could have suggested something to you that, or a time in your life that somebody suggested something to you that, you know, really it had a nocebo on you, sort of say. It didn't turn out well. Or maybe somebody suggested something to you and it did turn out well. Does anybody got a story like that?
Well, I was a foster parent for many years, and I think the main thing that I did for the kids is I'd look at them and I'd say, you know, you're good at this, that, and you know, you could do this kind of thing, I bet, and you know, like I would just make positive comments about them. And rather than, I think they'd been subjected to a lot of criticism up to that point, and a lot of those kids went on to do great things. They had their troubles because they'd had a very difficult childhood, but they were able to do amazing things, and I don't think it hurts, you know, just look at kids and see the real, I mean, you know, you don't have to make anything up, just the stuff that they're good at, you know, and notice it. Say, wow.
So, yes. Wow.
I found that to be a two-edged sword, the put-downs in the childhoods. And you want to overcome the negative stuff that you're told, the put-downs by your parents. At the same time, you believe what they say and you find it hard then to heal yourself and do good things because you think you cannot, you don't have, your self-esteem is low. But at the same time, you want to overcome that, and so you strive to do so. So you do great on one hand and you do poorly on the other hand. I have a good group here tonight, and Herbie has sort of kept on about the archetypes. Apparently, he knows that I have something to say, and what I have to say, it's sort of embarrassing, but I'm going to go ahead and tell the group. There's a book entitled Lethal Secret by Annette Barron and Ruben Panhar. It very well describes a thing called donor insemination. I was a victim of that. Donor insemination. I was not my father's child. I was an adulterate in that family. And even though he was supposed to have accepted that situation, he really did not. As tens of thousands of us out there are victims of that, and those fathers did not accept those children either, and they treated us really, really bad because inside they really hated us. Our problem was we had no idea that was going on because the medical field taught the secrecy, and it was our identities were kept secret from us all the growing up. And I was 40 years old before I ever learned the truth of that. So there I was being told by that father so many times that I was nothing but a nervous little child that could not do a damn thing, as he so well put it. And I believed him. Of course, as I grew on into adulthood, I was determined to prove him wrong. And so I succeeded in college and some sports, and I played a little football in college and this sort of thing to prove him wrong. And I did graduate from college and so forth. And but still, I had that self-esteem and that assurance deep inside of me that I can't do things, the low self-esteem to deal with, and the fear. And I was taught by the mother to be afraid. If you knew the dynamics, or if you ever read that book, you would understand that these children were taught by their parents to be afraid. And we were. and they were good at what they did because they scared us to death. And I'm rattling now, so I'll hush.
What was the name again, Jay?
Of the book?
Yeah.
Did you? Lethal Secret. Lethal Secret. In other words, it wasn't the act of donor insemination that was lethal. It was the secret that was kept that was lethal. They kept the secret of our identities. They did not tell us who we were. Now, that's going on in fertility clinics out here in the country by the tens of thousands even today. This was prominent back in the 40s and 50s, believe it or not. And there are movements now to stop the secrecy that's being kept and tell these children who they are and that they have a right to know. This also goes on in adoptions as well. And so a lot of damage has been done. A lot of damage is still being done.
Yeah, my girlfriend is adopted, and she talks a lot about the same things in adoption. How important it is to be open, you know? Let them know.
Yeah.
Man, for you to get on here and say that, you know, you just released something. You just let it out. You just let something out of, you know, that's been probably boiling for a long time. So I'm really glad to hear that. You know, it takes a man to stand up and say what you said there and just get it off your chest. And you my hero, brother. You my hero.
Thank you, Herbie. Thank you, man.
God bless you, Bob.
You know, they tell me that the human brain is so powerful that it can deal with almost anything that it knows about. But if it's not aware of a subject, it doesn't know what's going on, can't deal with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we had to suffer as these children. That's what we had to suffer. It was like, I equated it many times to, it's like being in a totally dark room. A black dark room, like if you're in a cave and they turn the lights off, that's total darkness. And in there is a monster with you, and once in a while, you don't know he's there, and he's knocking you down. But you don't even know you're being knocked down by it. You don't even know it. All you know is once in a while, you feel yourself trying to get up off the floor. So you have no idea. This is the truth of this. You have no idea the monster is there. You have no idea that what you're fighting. You have no idea that you're even fighting anything. And so you just find yourself trying to get up off the floor once in a while. And then when you're about 40 years old, you discover that for the first 40 years of your life, you've been in a black room with a monster that's been beating the hell out of you for 40 years. Something like that. That's the best example I can think of.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We're glad you're here, buddy, and you said what you went through, and by the grace of God, you sound like a real intellectual person, and I know you got a heart as big as Texas, brother. They didn't win. They got part of me, but they didn't get out right. That's right, brother. Thank you, man. God bless you, brother. That's awesome.
Mm.
Wow. Great story. Great story, Jay.
I liked your story. I liked your story about being in the room and you know, with that monster that's beating you up and you can't even see him. I feel the same way. I think for the last 10, 15 years, I've been there's been something that's bugging me, and I haven't known what it was. It was about my family and what was my role within the family. And in the last 6 months, I'm turning 40, and I guess it's at the same time as you. I'm starting to realize what that monster in the darkened room is, and you're right. It's if I knew what it was, if I had known back then what I know now, I don't think it would have hurt me so much. But it's the fact that I didn't know that made it so rough. I can't defend myself against what I don't see.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Is there, let me interject. Is there anybody that can't hear the echo that's going through the phone right now? So if you want, so if you don't hear the echo, then, you know, while you're not speaking, then just mute yourself. And then when you get ready to speak, unmute yourself and it'll fix everything. Okay, guys.
Okay.
Forrest, you there?
I am indeed.
Okay. Somebody got it just then. I believe, it went out.
Okay. Have you been muting Anonymous? I think that whenever Anonymous is muted, I don't hear the echo. Anyway, yeah, I don't want to dwell on it. I think Anonymous is the one. I think they have computer speakers on. But anyway, let's go on with the show because we're having a great discussion anyway.
Yeah, great. The last topic was from page 146 from chapter 8, The Power of Suggestion. We started talking about the shaman and the power of suggestion, and then Jay went into that powerful testimony he gave there. And the next one he calls seeding your unconscious. It's getting symptoms from others' thoughts, ills, and recommendations. It's like this. When I read that chapter, I'm like, have you ever been around somebody and when you sit down and you're next to them, you just start getting this feeling, like you might have been in a good mood, but then when they come in the room, you start getting this dreadful feeling, you start getting this negative feeling, and you're like, where's that coming from? And then all of a sudden, you notice that it's this other person that came in and sat down next to you. They didn't have to say anything. It was just went off from their energy vibes. I know this is probably a little different than the way Steve might be saying it, but it's called seeding your unconscious. And we can really pick up stuff. Like, what is it? I think it was 90%. Is that right, Forrest? 90% of how we talk to each other, how we, you know, get across to each other is the body language, is the energy. It's not the words, is the body language. So seeding your unconscious, somebody that might have came around, sat down, just got around you, and you just felt, you just know that they wasn't enjoying the day. They might have been having a bad day. They was full of anger or fear or something. Is there anybody like that you might have had to been around in your lifetime? I know a lot of family members are usually like that to some of us. And when they come over, we're like, here comes Wendy Weiner. But she's speaking. Wendy Weiner speaking. But what I'm talking about is you can just feel it when they come around. Maybe it's easy to tell if somebody's argued, you know, but I'm talking about where you just feel it like an energy vibe. Does that make sense to anybody?
Definitely.
Yes, it does. Sure.
Okay. Well, the question is, does these type of people get underneath your skin?
Yes.
Because if they, okay. Okay. Thank you, Jay. They do mine too. And really, you know, the reason I brought that up is because those type of people is where we have to watch the reactions. It's not just the unconscious thing. It's the people that just get on your nerves, period. And, I think it's good to watch our reactions. Has anybody got a story of somebody like that around and then you caught yourself, you know, just to have to go mellow out and calm yourself down?
I'm sure there's one down there. I can't think of one, but I'm sure there's several of them in there.
Like later, I'll think about it. A mother-in-law. Okay, I got plenty of things about family members that I'm not going to go into. We'll just go to the next one. Is that okay?
Sure.
Doctors that have convinced you of issues. This is, I'm gonna read from Steve's book, From Seeding Your Unconscious, okay? And I'm going to give the an example here. He says, in 1993, 10 years before I began to understand the power of suggestion, I was sitting in the clubhouse after a round of golf. A friend asked me if I wanted some spicy chicken wings, and I told him, no, they give me heartburn. The next week, that friend walked up to me and said, damn it, Steve-O, I have never had heartburn after eating those wings, but after talking with you, I had heartburn that night. I was glad to be of help. The process unfolds every day in front of us and yet goes unrecognized because we aren't expecting to see new ships on the horizon. I also no longer have digestive problems since I've come to understand conditioning and the brain's fervent need for body focus. I used to have heartburns all the time, and this is a little different than what he's got there, but as soon as I learn about TMS, the heartburn went away. I can eat any spicy food I want and everything, and it doesn't bother me. But anyway, that has nothing to do with what Steve said there. Steve basically gave this guy heartburns, okay, guys, through the seeding the unconscious. And, wow. But he goes on, and I'm going to go on to the next one. He says, the process unfolds every day in front of us and yet goes unrecognized because we aren't expecting to see new ships on the horizon. I also no longer have digestive problems since I come to understand conditioning and the brain's fervent need for body focus. Now, this mystery Dr. Sulfur refers to isn't confined to the feet. And I want to talk about this mystery that Dr. Sulfur talks about. There is a veritable epidemic of foot pain in our society, and we was talking about that a little earlier. All of a sudden, everyone has foot problems, from pro athletes to the couch potato next door. And this has not always been the case. And when I started my medical training about 20 years ago, foot pain was not a common complaint. Now it is in vogue, and everywhere you turn, there is no doubt in my mind that the overwhelming majority of foot pain attributed to plantar fasciitis, heel spurs, neuromas, and other physical causes in TMS. The key words here are no doubt. Now, I'm going to go on to one more thing. This mystery Dr. Sulfur refers to isn't confined to the feet. It also applies to the hands and all the new so-called repetitive stress disorders, fibromyalgia, and, of course, good old back and neck pain. So, has anybody had this sitting your unconscious in the hands or repetitive stress disorders from the sitting your unconscious or the back pain, neck pain, or the fibromyalgia? We talked about the foot pain earlier, and Joy did.
I have trigger fingers. Does anyone have trigger fingers?
Now, a trigger finger, now from where I'm from, a trigger finger is, what do you call it? What is it? Where I'm from deep south, so down here, you know, we go hunting. So the trigger finger, you know, is the index
finger. The fingers lock. When you close your fist, fingers won't straighten back out. They lock.
That happened to me a lot when I got dehydrated.
Supposed to be an irritation of the that cartilaginous sleeve or something that the leaders go through.
I had like an early pre-trigger finger. I had a nodule right underneath the first segment of my middle finger. It hurt a lot, and I think it clicked a little bit. I don't remember the details, but it didn't
right.
really lock yet like it does for some people.
Right, it clicks. That's right. That's what I'm talking about. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
My hand, I would work. I've been in construction for over 20 years. I'd get out and work, and you would think after, you know, 20 years, my hands wouldn't be locking up like that. But say I get up that morning, it wouldn't be a great morning. Everything wouldn't be going too great because I can relate back to it now. and I'd get out there with the shovel, and I would start working. 30 minutes into it, I couldn't hardly straighten my hands out. And it wasn't hot enough at the time to be getting, you know, to the point that I'm dehydrated, but my hands just wouldn't straighten out. So I don't know if that's – it would usually take me about half the day to get my hands to straighten back out. So I wonder if that could be like trigger finger, Jay.
I don't know. I really don't.
Wow. See, I learn new things about myself just about every week. Like a few weeks ago when me and Forrest was speaking, or about a month ago, I learned about the neck pain that I hadn't even thought about, that I haven't thought about in over a year, that's been gone, but it was there for 20 years, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I've had somewhere all up and down that spine, that TMS has attacked me everywhere almost.
Mm-hmm.
I've had skin problems, trigger fingers, shoulder problems, bouts with psoriasis, allergies, nasal allergies, horrible stuff, and it's all related. Even some GERD, you know, esophageal spasms and stuff like that. Just about anything that could be labeled TMS, I've had some of it. I'm a great candidate.
Yeah, the poster boy, just like me.
Healing back pain has me on every page.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Go ahead, Forrest.
Oh, I was just going to say that in terms of having someone getting the symptoms that you see out in the culture, I think that definitely happened with me. I mean, I started reading about repetitive stress injuries. They were all the rage in the early 90s when I first started getting my TMS, and so that's exactly what I got. I was reading about it in the news. Everybody was talking about carpal tunnel syndrome and repetitive strain injuries and trigger finger and RSD and, you know, all these other things. And so that's what I got. Now I think people don't get them as much. It used to be that every news that in the newsroom, everybody either had TMS, TMS, either had a repetitive strain injury like carpal tunnel syndrome, or were afraid they were going to get it. And now it's just disappeared. In fact, you can Google on Freakonomics. They just did a story called "What Happened to the Epidemic of Carpal Tunnel Syndrome?" because everybody noticed it just went away. I think maybe it's because they stopped, they realized that it wasn't real. I know on some of the old mailing lists that I used to go to, I think basically the Sarno approach, too many people realized that they could get better using the Sarno approach and that it was really a mind-body condition. I don't know what happened, but that's my experience.
Must be true.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's the panic and fear that we can get also this same way from TV ads. I think like Forrest mentioned a while ago. What all did he say here? I'm going to read this. Epidemiologists have referred to this passing on of symptoms as amplification. In this case, it is shared suffering through shared mistaken beliefs. Television ads and a very small number of physicians purposely plant seeds of fear. Fear-provoking suggestions like warnings of esophageal reflux disease, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, back pain from sitting on fat wallets, erectile dysfunction, prostate enlargement, dry eyes, and so on, all can become chronic conditions if the individual can be persuaded to focus on them, to fear them. That focus, when we are told something from TV, from a doctor, from an archetype, that focus and that fear on that, it seems to be the main powers that bring this to pass in our lives. What do you think, Forrest?
Say that again.
The focus and fear, you know, when we're like you was mentioning earlier, when you saw the TV ads about the repetitive stress disorder, the archetypes that can talk to us, the power of suggestions, like the shaman that can talk to us, even sitting your unconscious, you know. It's the panic, it's the fear and the focus on that. When they say that, when we see it, it's the fear and focus that we put towards it that creates the symptoms in our body, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's this great quote from Healing Back Pain that he had in here. I'm going to see if I can find it. One of my favorites. He said, the pain is there to get you focused on the body. And until you learn to not focus on the body, the pain will be there. So if you're focusing on, and I think that's something we see on the forums a lot, is people are focusing so hard on healing, which is natural, of course they are, but they focus so much on healing that they're still focused on the body. And what they need to do is they need to get over that fear, because that fear is huge. You know, it gets deep inside you. I think that's key. That fear is important, and getting over it. So I agree 100%.
Wow. Okay.
I have a question if I can.
Go ahead. No, you're fine.
It's Panda Girl. I have a question about getting through that, not detaching from the pain. I have symptoms like 24/7. Like it's not like I can lay down in bed and get into a comfortable position or relieve pressure or whatnot. But I have trouble, like, when I lay down to rest and feeling like electricity running through my body constantly, and it sucks me in. And I try mindfulness, and I try different things. And I'm curious if anybody else has ever experienced that 24/7, no relief, no good position. There's no break. There's no reprieve. Or am I alone in that?
Oh, you're absolutely not alone in that. Yeah, I think a lot of people deal with that. Okay. It's
I have it too. Yeah. This is Joan.
But sometimes I read the TMS material and I feel like I'm different, because I feel like maybe some of the stories that you read back, it was like, they have it when they're doing a certain thing. They have pain when they're doing a certain thing. And I can get on the treadmill and run, and sometimes my feet will go a little bit numb, and I'll have some running pain, but it doesn't stop me from any activity. But when I try to rest, it's like that's when it's just always there, but it just becomes magnified,
mm-hmm.
and it's like there's never a break. So I'm glad that I'm not the only one that has experienced that.
Yeah, I think it's very personal. Everybody's mm-hmm. totally different, but I think there are a lot of people who are in it all the time. I think at the very end of the chapter, Steve has some tips on that. He talks about scientific article where they talk about a theory that pain messages to the brain can be blocked by competing stimuli. And he talks about changing the channel on the pain. That's what it says. He says, addressing these competing stimuli is Dr. Sarno's point. As long as the sufferer is in any way preoccupied with what his body is doing, the pain will continue. The idea is to focus on something other than the body, some competing stimulus, such as a new life goal. Emmett Miller, MD, refers to this as changing the channel on the pain. Competing stimuli diverts the brain, rendering it unable to process the sensation of pain. I think that it won't have an immediate effect. So it's not something that where you can take on a new activity, and it's not something where with your TMS personality you're going to want to dive into another activity and have that become the new obsession. But I do think that changing the channel on the pain helps me, at least. When I have something which is really bugging me, if I start doing something else, something that I care about, it tends to get a little bit better.
Panda Girl, you had mentioned earlier about Peter Levine and Waking the Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you say that you just now started studying it? How long has it been?
No, I downloaded it last night, actually.
Okay.
And so I've I'm just barely into it. And I was actually in the middle of rereading Steve's book as well, so I'm a little bit behind, and I haven't reread chapter 8 yet. But I'm going to go back and look at that for us, that part that you just mentioned, because that does kind of resonate with me. Like, I feel like I need to change the channel, and I feel like it's in a vicious cycle, and I don't know quite how yet to. Like, sometimes during the day, I can get my mind off of it if I do have competing stimulus, like running. Like, I don't feel tingly when I'm running.
But, that's awesome.
But I'm one of those ones. I've had clean MRIs and clean X-rays, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with my back. I know that I don't even have anything physical to blame it on. But so I'm going to go back and read that. Thank you for pointing that out for us all.
Sure. I hope it helps.
Chew on that. Thank you. I'm going to chew on that.
And what's your symptoms right now? It's the electrical tingling stuff. Is it painful? Is it unnerving?
It's pain. I mean, it's painful, and it feels almost. Can I explain this to my husband? It almost feels like I'm being tortured in my own body. Like, sometimes I have some stabbing pain, some sciatica and that sort of thing, but sometimes I have the nerve in my leg feels like a guitar string, and it just feels like somebody's plucking a guitar string very violently, like all the time. I just feel like I have a current, electrical current running through my body up to my neck, down to my feet, and it's mostly like the left side of my body, and it's just constant. And it's gotten better than it was 2.5 years ago, and it's a little bit cyclical, but at no point has it ever gone away, even for a minute. But I know that also means that I'm focusing on it. So
yeah, well, I think the key is also just getting back and enjoying your life, and saying, okay, it's here, and it's going to stick around for a while. TMS is part of the human condition, but I'm still going to find stuff to love in my life. And it sounds like you're doing that. I mean, I think you're on the right track. You sound right to me. I don't know. Sometimes you just get intuitions, and I hear your voice, and what do I know? But it sounds like you're on the right track. When you feel that sensation, does it feel scary, or does it just feel ow, or does it feel like you want to wriggle out of your body? Like, what's your experience of that guitar plucking feeling?
It used to cause me panic attacks, and I would have panic attacks daily, multiple mm-hmm. times per day. So when you say that I sound right in my voice, I think I've come a long, long way.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So I feel progress in that. Cause I'm not panicking as much as but sometimes, like, I'll be on the TMS bandwagon, like 100%. And then just sometimes, like, after just hours and hours and hours, it kind of just sucks me back in, and then I start to have that doubt again. But it is unnerving, and sometimes it's painful. But we need to, you lay down to, I've got two little girls, and so, my day is quite busy, and, sometimes it's pretty hectic around here. And then, when I lay down to rest, or if I have to sit to work, it's just unnerving, and sometimes it will build and build and build and make me feel anxious, because I'm just like, what in the world is this? Make it stop. Yeah. And so part of me still trying to figure it out, because it doesn't seem classic TMS to me. It's not back, it's not back pain, and it's not, 90% of what I've seen, at least, is TMS presented. And so I have that nagging thing, like, I have to figure it out.
Let that go. Let that go. You don't have to figure it out. Just it's TMS.
Could I interject what she's saying about that shocking sensation and stuff she's had, like the shocking sensation?
Please.
Doesn't that sound so much like oxygen deprivation to you?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's okay, what happens when my hand goes to sleep.
Yeah.
I do feel like my, like
I
my
mean, it's classic TMS. That's classic TMS.
Oh, at least, well, thank you, know, you guys. I
that's
do
exactly
feel like
what it sounds like.
My low, like my glutes feel like they'll, feel like, you know, pins and needles, and then my feet will go to sleep.
Yeah.
It's in a normal, like if I'm sitting in a chair.
That's what happens when you cut the oxygen and blood flow off. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this happens all the time, Panda Girl, because I wake up every day. My when I wake up every morning, my hands are numb and my feet are numb right now. But you know, I get up moving, which is normal. You know, I think that's normal because I get up, move around, and you know, the pins and needles feeling goes away. But with you, does it tend to come on more so when you're tensed, when something's going on this that might be making you tensed, or say you get tensed after it starts happening, does it get worse?
It can get worse. Like if I'm, you know, I don't really have a lot of stress in my life these days. But you know, other than I say that, but then you know, I've got a 2-year-old and the almost 1-year-old, and
mm-hmm.
you know.
So, yeah, so we I all got like, yeah.
Yeah, hey Panda Girl.
Yeah.
Hey Panda Girl, this is Mouse Mom.
Yeah.
And, hey, I know you replied.
I love
to my,
these names.
I know. Yeah. Hey, I know. You know. I we can't deny it. I mean, you have 2 kids. That's stress. I don't care if you have the
yeah.
best kids in the world. I have 3 boys, and you know, just it's you have 2 kids. I don't care how well behaved they are. It's still stressful.
Thank you. That makes me feel. But I do have little angels of little. They just really are. They are such sweet girls. But
I know. But
know,
I don't. I think as moms, we forget how demanding it is, though.
Right.
I got.
Right.
I got and 2 chihuahuas. That's pretty mom. Demanding.
Yeah, chihuahuas would be demanding.
You know, my kid,
well,
my boy's grown up, but my chihuahuas are very demanding.
Well, I want to ask Panda Girl a question real quick.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Panda Girl, like just talking about your experience right now, how are you feeling right now? Are you feeling like, is your skin hot? Are you feeling a little jittery because you kind of are talking about it?
Oh, yeah. That's funny. I don't have hot skin right now, but that is something that I have had.
You know how
past,
you get that? Like, yeah, I just want to know because I've learned that too. The more I talk about it and I'm aware of it, my body reacts, and that's just
mm-hmm.
like a sign of I'm dealing with it. I'm feeling it at the time. Even last week when I talk about my symptoms and you know maybe getting a steroid injection or this, I could feel it after the conversation how amped up my body was. Just recognizing what I was dealing with. I just wondered, I just curious to see how you felt right now talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel the, it, you know, actually, right now, it's probably a little bit, it's a little bit less, but, because I'm walking around, but that's why.
Yeah,
But if I were to sit down right now, I would feel, probably a little bit tingly, and then I would get flashes on my skin. And I just feel like my nervous system is like in super aroused, hypervigilant state, but I've never found that that ability to like bring it down to the point where it ceases. Although I will say that in Steve's book in chapter 7, if you talk about the alpha, beta, theta, delta, brainwaves.
Mm-hmm.
I have 30 seconds of peace when I wake up in the morning before it starts.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so I recognize that part. You know, you have like, but then I look for it. And
yeah.
Then
you sound like me. I'm in a hyped up state right now, and I talk to Steve weekly right now, and so I'm lucky I get to talk to Steve. But you sound like me. He got me on Emmett Miller's stuff this last week, and it has helped.
Okay. Yeah, I listened to his interview with Emmett Miller.
I just started it. So Abolish Anxiety Now. You can download them instantly, like on a tablet or whatever. And so it does help, but I think what we're just, like you, I'm searching. I feel pain 24/7. Sometimes I don't sleep at night. I hear you.
I have a very difficult time sleeping. So let me ask you this. Do you feel like, because, you know, we have two kids, that's the only source of stress, but it's very difficult to, you know, you look around and I see other moms and I feel like I'm the only one that's, overwhelmed.
I do that. I sit at the school parking lot and go, am I the only weird one? Look at all these other moms walking around. They all have healthy backs. And I guarantee you, if I went to talk to them, they would have many more issues that they would blame on, you know, X, Y, and Z and not TMS. Is that we're just cued into it. Right. I think our nervous system is high right now because we're so cued into our body. We've learned about it. And so I think we're just on this. Sometimes I'm almost saying that anxiety now is a blessing because I'm actually figuring it out. I used to hate it, but now I'm like, it's because I'm actually tuning into how I'm feeling, and that makes me anxious.
Oh. I'm doing a book. I'm doing a workbook called Mind Over Mood, and it is like tying your emotions and thoughts together, which I think are sometimes disconnected, and so, but it's very difficult to it's uncomfortable to sit and try to do that work, you know, because it does intensify.
Yeah, and just take it as a gift. You'll figure it out one day, and you'll only be able to help your daughters.
Yeah,
I always think of that. You know, I'm going to be able to help my kids one day. Hopefully, avoid some pain in their life.
Right. You know, I think you may be able to relate to this as well, but I'm like a super calm mother. Like, if you saw me with my kids, you would never know that I was in pain or that, you know, I was anxious. I bury that stuff really well.
And most of the people that know me have no clue I suffer with back pain. Only my closest people. But my boys are constant basketball. A basketball mom just found out a few weeks ago, and she's like, you've hit it this long for me? We're good at that. That's why we have pain.
Yeah.
Wow. Guys, my sister is in excruciating pain. When she gets home, she can't even get out of bed. But then when she goes to work, she'll go to work, and she'll work 10, 12, 15-hour shifts. And she's not in pain at work. And it's, you know, I know what it is. But, you know, she has to understand and run on all that. But what I'm saying is she comes home. She's, as soon as she hits the household, she starts hurting. But when she goes to work, she can work 10, 12, 15 hours, and she's pain-free. So... wow, you know, the different things that people go through. It's something else, this TMS, and how it tries to fool you, how it tries to hit different parts of your thinking to try to make you think that that's not TMS.
Oh,
yeah.
You just hit the nail on the head there. It's trying to convince me that I have something else. I've got some type of metabolic disorder or some type of something else, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not TMS.
Do you feel like you have a lot of chatter in your brain?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I mean, I think about how I feel, you know, multiple times per minute. It's roaring, yeah.
Yeah. That might be the first thing to work on, you know.
Yep, that's what I have too.
Yeah.
I agree.
When I see people, sometimes I just see people on the forum, and they, you know, I see them, and they've got that crazy energy, and then a month later, they just seem calmer, just more relaxed, and I don't know how it happens, but it does seem to happen. And I always get this really strong feeling whenever I see someone who's learned to quiet down those voices, learn to let go of those voices, I always know that they're going to heal, that they're going to be happy soon. And so maybe that's something to think about is to, you know, to take a mindful approach to those thoughts and say, you don't have to think about those. You know, those are well-worn cognitive paths. These neural networks in your brain, they're really well-worn, and maybe just say, I'm not going to go down that path, you know, and stop exploring that. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking about recently, and it's really helped me.
No, that is a lot of stuff that I'm learning in therapy for us. I mean, I think you're dead on. And I think that, as much as I can say, I'm early in the process. I've been doing this for a long time, but,
me too.
It is, you know, that's hard to do in the midst of a lot of intense pain. So I have, you know, I have those thoughts, like when I'm running on my treadmill or when I'm busy, and, you know, I can distract my mind a whole lot easier. But and maybe it's just not that this is not linear, and I've just got to give my body a little bit longer to calm down, and then you know, the mind will follow. It's a cycle, I'm sure.
Yeah. I've taken to taking what I call mindful walks. I just go and I walk a certain place, and I just focus on, you know, the sensations of my body, or I focus on my breath, slowing it down maybe a little bit, or making it deeper, or what I'm seeing or something like that, just to say, okay, I'm not going to let the chatter in my brain distract me. I'm going to focus on the moment. And teach myself to focus my attention on what's going on. And I feel good about doing that because I know that approach is supported by a lot of research. Apparently, I mean, plus, you know, thousands of years of Buddhist practice, but recently,
right.
It's really supported by a lot of research, which is pretty exciting. I went to a conference 3 weeks ago, I live in Boston, and so it's nearby at Harvard Medical School. They have a mind body institute, the Benson Henry Mind Body Institute. Benson is a scientist, and Henry is actually the owner of the Red Sox. He gave like $20 million to endow this thing. Anyway, they talked about how this mindfulness just works really, really well, and it's exciting. I'm excited to try it. And it really taught me that calming down the chatter in your brain can be really positive.
Yeah, I call it monkey mind.
Yeah.
That's Deepak Chopra.
Monkey mind.
Monkey thinking.
Monkey mind.
There was something that Panda Girl said about when she wakes up in the morning. When you wake up, is it there, or does it take a like a second before the tingling or the electricity feeling starts?
Well, I have two scenarios. I have, if I'm woken up by a baby crying.
Yeah.
I am like, my face is tingling, my arms are tingling, my whole body is like super goofy.
So it happened in your sleep, unconsciously. Okay, go ahead.
So if I'm awakened by a baby crying over the baby monitor, that will send me like into an adrenaline rush type tingling, and I get going. Mm-hmm. But if I wake up on my own, which doesn't happen a whole lot, but if I wake up on my own, I have 30 seconds before it will perform the sciatica and that electricity starts.
Okay, have you ever, when you wake up in the morning, go ahead and have a positive memory, that you've emotionally thought about, you've went to in your memory bank, maybe even something you make up that just makes you feel good, that just gives you a good emotional feeling, and kind of, you know, take a few days to get it conditioned, or a week or so. And when you wake up, think about that memory. Think about that positive memory. First thing you wake up in the morning, think about that positive memory first. And see how it works.
Get two of them. That's a good idea.
Yeah, get two or three of them together, because one positive memory after another positive memory, then you should be able to beat it after a while before this, you know, because when you wake up and then you start to think, well, where is it at? And all of a sudden it hits you. Well, that's conditioning. So if you can just recondition by waking up and thinking of a positive memory, something that's made you feel good in the past, something, you know, that you just know is one of the great memories of your past, or a good thought about your future, or anything like that, that makes you feel good emotionally, think about that and give it a try, okay?
That's a good idea. I'm gonna work on that, because what I've been doing is when I wake up in the morning, I've been I immediately try to start breathing, and I think I'm gonna take deep breaths, and I'm gonna relax, and I'm gonna keep it at bay. But I think maybe that's not a good approach. Maybe I'm trying too hard.
It really is. Do the mindfulness. If you do the mindfulness, that's good. But while you're doing the mindfulness, go ahead and think about the positive, the memory that you probably, you know, like tonight. Go ahead and think of a positive memory. Close your eyes. Go there. Feel the emotions. See the sights. Hear the sounds. And you know, kind of connect with it. Go over it. Stay there 2 or 3 minutes. And then open your eyes and feel the emotion. And just sit there and think about it. And do that about 4 or 5 times, and until it kind of just is there. And then in the morning when you wake up, even if you have to wrap something pink around a finger to remind you, just do it. I think you can remember to think that positive thought, and put a couple of them together, and then, you know, two positive thoughts together should start to help you.
I like that idea. I'm going to try that.
Okay.
This is Joan. I just want to say that I have that as well the minute I wake up also.
Okay, Joan, have you tried that as soon as you wake up, to just to instantly focus on a good, positive, emotional memory?
No, I was doing the same, trying the breathing, but I will try that.
Okay, yeah, try that. Give it a try, because it's really helped a lot of friends I know, and it reconditioned them. So give it a try.
Thanks. Great.
Great. Okay. Anybody else got something they want to talk about? Suggestions, panic and fear before we call it a night? Well, Forrest, you got any last words you want to say about the chapter?
Not me. You've done a great job of guiding us through it.
Okay.
Been a great meeting. Great meeting.
It really has.
Thank you, Jay. I just want to, you know, say we got to talk about archetypes tonight, which is, you know, usually people we look up to, or healers, or mothers, fathers, and so forth. We talked about the power of suggestion. And we talked about panic and fear and seeding your unconscious. So we got to go into a lot of different scenarios, and a lot of our friends here got to speak up, like Panda Girl and Joan and Enjoy and Jay, about different issues that they've been going through that collaborated with Chapter 8 of Steve's book. And that's what we're here for. We're here to get these discussions out that relates to these chapters, and get something and a positive movement out of it. So, guys, I think we did that tonight. What do y'all think?
Well, we did, especially, and I was glad to learn about the tarps. I'm going to be thinking a lot about that.
Yeah, well, make sure to send me an email, forest@tmswiki.org. Enjoy has already sent me one, and I'll set up a mailing list specifically for it.
Okay.
Okay, guys, I'm going to end the meeting, and it's been awesome.
Thank
God bless you all.
See you next
Take
week.
Care. Thanks so much.